Forget about the era when Americans worked for 30 years for the same company and walked into retirement with a gold watch. These days, we're likely to have 10 or more jobs over the course of a lifetime, and those jobs are often all over the map in terms of skills and prestige. For 7 months now, NPR's Morning Edition has traced the stories of people engaged in radical career shifts. One of those profiled was Manon Martin. She recently hung up her job as an accountant and headed off to Paris to become a professional belly dancer. And she joins us now from her home in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi, we're talking to you in Seattle and not in Paris. What happened?
That's right. I'm back in Seattle. Paris was great, but I'm an American citizen. My family's here. The people that I love here, my life is here.
So what did you learn in Paris?
Well, I think the most important thing that I learned while there was a sense of being able to trust that a person can pursue work that is meaningful and rewarding. And once you begin to make the steps in that direction, you will be met by support. So I have a greater sense of trust.
In yourself, in the process, in what?
In myself and also in the forces that are, so to speak.
Why did you make this switch in the first place?
I was doing work that was very boring. I wasn't happy. I was good at what I was doing, but I wasn't happy.
Were you making money?
I was making good money. But I wasn't happy doing what I was doing, and I wanted to do work that spoke more to my heart. And I love dancing. I'm an artist by nature, and I wanted to pursue that and see if it was possible for me to do it, and I did.
Why belly dancing?
Oh, my gosh, it's so beautiful. It's beautiful, it's creative, it's spiritual, and then there's also the sparkles, the sequins, the finger symbols, and the music.
I gather, if you have any second thoughts, they may be, why didn't I do this earlier?
Right, right. Well, you know, there's a lot of us have the fear factor that kind of inhibits us as we go through life, and it just takes a little effort and a little commitment to get beyond that.
And you were making good money at the job you didn't like before. All right, now you're a professional belly dancer.
That's right.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm working regularly. I've got some really good projects coming up. It's great. I have absolutely no regrets about my decisions.
And paying the rent and doing all those good things, too?
That's right.
Congratulations.
It's possible. It can happen.
Good for you. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Neil.
Manon Martin's story prompts obviously several questions. How do you jump into the uncharted waters of a new career without the life vest of work experience? Is it worth the risk to leave a lucrative but unsatisfying job? Is there an age limit on reinvention? Today, you're going to help us answer those questions. We want your stories of career reinvention. If you leapt from MD to LAPD or office lackey to lion tamer, we'd like to hear about it. Later, the latest pulpy pot boiler from Middle Eastern author Saddam Hussein. Yes, that Saddam Hussein. And we'll take a 5-minute vacation to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But first, how to navigate a major life or career change. If you've walked out on a steady job to pursue a lifelong dream, or if you're thinking really hard about it, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we're joined by NPR senior correspondent Ketzel Levine, whose Take Two series can be heard Wednesdays on NPR's Morning Edition. She comes to us from her home in Portland, Oregon. Ketz, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Neil. How are you?
Now, you have your own personal story of life change.
I guess so. I started at NPR back in 77 and was on the original Morning Edition team. And I became NPR sports director. You remember those days, don't you?
Indeed, I do. We were colleagues up at the 1980 Lake Placid Olympic Games.
In fact, we also did this baseball trivia show during the strike. Do you remember that?
Now I do. Now I do.
Yeah,
I'm trembling here. But let's cut the story short there. you've gone on, of course, to become NPR's doyen of dirt.
I did. I went from sports to arts, which was really where my heart was. And then I took a decade off from NPR and studied horticulture and had a landscape design and installation business, became the doyen of dirt on Weekend Edition Saturday. And now I'm back on staff at Morning Edition doing more general reporting.
And through all of this, these are steps in the dark? I mean, you're changing careers. I mean, a lot of it involved radio, but some of it didn't. Certainly not the landscaping business.
No, that decade off was really terrific. And, you know, addressing the idea of making that leap that Manon was talking about, I think that for many of us, certainly myself, it becomes just a complete inability to do what it was that we were doing that makes us finally take the leap. You know, in other words, like any change, when the behavior isn't working and the feelings are rotten, you know, it sometimes becomes so uncomfortable doing what doesn't feel right that it makes it easy to leap. And I think in my case, I really needed to get away from the deadlines of NPR, and I really needed to get out into the garden.
Mm-hmm. What reasons do most people give for deciding for a mid-career or midlife career shift?
Feeling that they're not doing anything that has any meaning either to themselves or anyone else. That is what I hear over and over again. I mean, Manon is very typical of a lot of people who are in the financial world who sort of say, I'm doing exactly what I set out to do and it's going exactly the way I had hoped it would go. But, you know, at the end of the day, what am I doing? How do I feel? What am I taking home with me? Not much. And there tends to, if they're lucky, like she was, be some sort of passion on the side that starts to call to them mm-hmm. and maybe becomes a hobby. And they begin to cultivate it and spend more and more time at it and finally decide, I'm going to take the leap.
And what is it when people think about it but ultimately decide not to take the leap? Is there anything that you could characterize about their decision?
Well, the people that I have heard from are people who have looked into what the leap was going to be, came close, and then stopped before they made it because they discovered, in terms of one guy I was talking to who is a CEO of a small company and wanted to become a forest ranger and went through all of the testing necessary to get there and discovered that the business of being a forest ranger had turned more towards law enforcement than I think the environmental end of things that he was so passionate about. So before he did enough research to realize, wait a minute, this isn't for me. Hmm. So that's typical of the stories I hear too, that people put their toe in the water and then they find out and then, you know, and then of course there are other people who make the leap and they do not and things don't work out and then it's time for another reinvention.
We'd like to hear from those of you who have stories in any of those categories or any of the others we haven't mentioned. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org, and we've gotten a lot of emails in response already, Ketzel. I was a computer analyst, writes Chris Stewart, for 20 years before quitting my job 4 years ago and becoming a bluegrass musician. I'm now touring full-time with my band, Chris Stewart, and backcountry. I'm making about a tenth of what I made before, but I am better off for it.
It's really very typical of a lot of what I get. And it thrills me. I mean, can you imagine, given my job, I am living vicariously constantly through all these people who are hurling themselves off ledges and having a ball.
Let's get a caller on the line. Alex is with us. Alex calling from Salisbury, Maryland.
How are you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. I was in a dispatch position with a trucking company for 5-6 years, and before that in seafood for 20-some-odd years. And I used to have to go into the parking lot and sit in my car for 5 minutes to build up the nerve to go inside the building.
Hmm.
And decided I'd had enough of that and jumped out. I'm a kitchen and bath contractor now and absolutely love what I do. I probably work as many, if not more, hours, make about the same amount of money, and I live in the American dream.
Alex, was there a moment where you said, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to do this?
Yeah, the day that I turned in my 2-week notice.
And what was the reason? Just simply, I don't know if I can make any money to support my family?
More fear than anything else. I mean, with one daughter in college and the other one coming up on college, it was an act of faith.
You did this with two kids in college?
Pardon me?
You did this with two kids in college? I'm just admiring your courage.
One in college, one on her way into college, yes.
Alex, congratulations. I'm glad things are working out for you.
Thank you much.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Let's go now to, this is Ashraf. Am I getting that correct?
Yes, Ashraf Sawalem.
Ashraf, and calling from Boulder, Colorado. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was an architect in Egypt and fell in love with opera during the late 80s and decided to make a career shift. and got trained there, actually came to the U.S. and got my academic training, then went back to Egypt and was a big star. I worked maybe 10 operas a year in the Cairo Opera Company. And then later, I decided to make another lateral move and move to the U.S., where it's a lot more competitive and a lot less secure financially. But right now, I'm managed out of New York and London, and I'm booked all throughout next year. I'm doing my 10th show this season, so it's been a very good move.
Wow! From architecture to be an opera singer, don't you have to study from a very young age?
Well, not really. I started studying when I was about 23, 24. So I had a wonderful teacher back in Egypt, and then when I came here to the University of Colorado at Boulder, they have one of the best voice departments in the nation.
And you then went back to Egypt, where you were very successful, you're saying, and now...
Yeah, I worked for Disney Egypt, dubbing Disney into Arabic, and I taught at the American University in Cairo, and I was a house singer with the Cairo Opera House.
Now, throughout this, did you ever have any, you know... You just spent, if you were in your early 20s, most of your life studying to be an architect. Presumably your parents also had some investment in this, and you said, I'm going to chuck it all and study opera.
Well, it took me actually about a year from when I felt I wanted to become an opera singer until I decided to make the shift. And I spent that year thinking about all the reasons why I shouldn't make that change, but I ended up just being so, you know, overpowered by my passion for it, and I did it anyway. I mean, you know, you can understand that within the Egyptian society, which is a lot more conservative, becoming an quote-unquote artist is a lot less, less respectable career choice, than if you did it here. If one of your callers, if she had decided to become a belly dancer in Egypt from an accountant, someone would have killed her.
Ashraf, good luck to you, and congratulations. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We've been hearing a lot of stories about some of the upsides of midlife career shifts. We'll talk about some of the risks, too, when we get back from a short break. Ketzel Levine is our guest. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Career change is a pretty bland description for a shift that can alter not just who signs your paycheck, but your entire lifestyle, your sense of yourself. It's a second take at life, which is also quite close to the name of Ketzel Levine's series on NPR's Morning Edition, where she profiles radical job switchers. She's with us today. We invite you to share your stories of career change. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can send a one-paragraph version of your story to TOTN at NPR.org. Ketzel Levine is with us from her home in Oregon, and this is an email we got from Justin Lazenby. Going into college, I had a love of science and the ambition to go to medical school. I quickly found an interest in theater and decided to make a go at a career in the arts, despite graduating with a BA in chemistry. Having always been a lover of movies, after college, I moved to Los Angeles, landed a job casting children as extras in movies, television commercials, you name it. After a few years, the glamour of being in the biz quickly wore off, and I decided to go back to school and get my master's degree in criminalistics. The first agency to hire me was the Oregon State Police Forensic Services Division. Today, I'm a full-fledged forensic scientist working in the Portland Crime Lab. So, Ketzel, don't do anything bad. Justin will be after you.
You know, it's such a great letter and so very, very typical of many of the letters that I get. And by the way, let me just take this moment to say that our hope is for the Take Two series to continue through the year. And I'm soliciting actively wonderful stories of people primarily who are in the midst of change, which is where I like to find them.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Rob. Rob calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Well, I'm one of those people. I'm in the midst of change. July 10th will be my last day as a youth minister here in Charlotte. It was kind of a mutually agreed upon leaving, but one of the things that I'd like to pursue is more of a career in music. I do preschool and children's music. In fact, I've recorded a children's music CD that you can find on www.robbutton.com. But I also happen to have diabetes, and so the need for insurance is tantamount, to say the least.
Paramount, I think, is what you...
Paramount, thank you. Well, see, I'm good at music, not so much with words. it makes me wish I almost lived in Canada or someplace like that that had socialized medicine so that wouldn't be a worry and I could just worry about taking care of my family. But I don't know. It's just one of those, how do you manage those in-between times, in between when you have something with insurance and something without?
Ketzel?
Yeah, you know, I just came back from Sparks, Nevada, where I did a profile of a couple who had left very secure jobs at the University of Alaska to start a doggy training and doggy daycare business in Sparks. And she has a lot of problems. She's a 48-year-old woman who's got all sorts of medical problems, and they gave up their health insurance, and they're pretty nervous about it. And he did an enormous amount of research, and I think through the National Association of Self-Employed has finally come up with something that is a manageable solution. But that does tend to be sort of the really scary thing, and frankly, I would find that pretty frightening. However, people are solving the problem.
Right.
Rob, you sound as if you also have a family, you said?
I do. I have two young boys and a wife.
And is that a concern as well?
Absolutely. And that's my primary. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I took the job I was doing before in youth ministry. It's something I have a call and a passion for, but maybe not the skills, but they hired me anyway. And anyway, it's a great concern of mine, that I can't go off insurance. I'm on an insulin mm-hmm. pump, and the supplies mm-hmm. are just astronomically expensive.
Well, Rob, I think your cell phone may be dying, so get it recharged. Appreciate the phone call, and good luck to you.
Neil, can I tell you another story about insurance?
Sure.
One of the early profiles that we did was of a gentleman who had left being a speech pathologist. He worked in schools, in elementary schools, and he had some money in the bank and was able to stop working, but was very concerned that he wouldn't actually have enough to cover insurance. And so what he did was that he took a job at Safeway, 16 hours a week, which after several months gave him complete full benefits. So that was his solution at 58-59, is to start bagging at Safeway 16 hours a week and then pursuing whatever else he wanted to do in his other time. A lot of creative solutions.
Interestingly, we got an email about that. This from Jesse Thorne, who writes, I'm a public radio host. I host a show called The Sound of Young America, but I've been thinking about making the switch to bagging groceries for the pay, mostly.
Yeah, that's a good plug for Safeway.
Joining us now is Tony Lee. He's the publisher of CareerJournal.com, a free career website from the Wall Street Journal. He's with us now from the Journal Studios in Princeton, New Jersey. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
What are the main reasons for dissatisfaction other than public radio hosts wondering about the money?
Well, you have a lot of folks who start down a career path, and 15 or 20 years later, they realize, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? I'm not very happy. You know, the most miserable time of my life is Sunday night when I'm thinking about having to go back to work on Monday morning. Sometimes it's because they were in college and they graduated and there was this job, and so they took it, and it kind of led down a path they didn't expect. Other times it's parental pressure, you know, dad did this and granddad did this, so you should do this too, kind of thing. Lawyers are a very good example of that. It's very hard to find lawyers who seem to be happy with what they're doing. So sometime at mid-career, they say, you know, gosh, I'm going to be working another 20 years at least. I want to do something I enjoy. And that's when you start to get this really serious introspection about, boy, there's got to be something better for me to do.
Are there basic steps that can guide people along the, at least through the idea of making a career shift?
Sure. I mean, I've got one thing that I like to suggest to people. It's very simple, but it tends to be fairly effective. And that's pull out a legal sheet of paper. And down the left-hand side, write down all the things you really have liked about your job or any job you've had. You know, what is it you truly enjoy doing? I love working with lots of different customers through the day. Or I enjoy sitting in my desk all alone with no one bothering me, you know, focusing on something. Whatever it is, fill out that entire list of the things you really like. Then down the right-hand side, write all the things you really don't like. You know, the deadline pressures or the having to work bad hours or whatever it might be. And then when you're all done, think creatively and try and come up with a job description that captures as much of the stuff on the left-hand side as you can. That'll give you a good sense of the direction you might want to be going. And, you know, I've been writing about this stuff for 20 years. I'll give you lots of great examples of people who have made that kind of leap after they figured out, you know, boy, this is something I really want to be doing. Nothing's going to stop me now. I'm going to go do it.
Mm-hmm. But a little cost-benefit analysis might be helpful at the beginning.
True. And that goes to some of the points you've raised already, which is a lot of these people will make these changes without quitting their job. You know, without giving, tipping your hand, saying, I'm out of here, you start the exploration process, you start looking for a new opportunity, and then do your best not to leave your old job until you have something new lined up. That's always a great example. The other one that you guys were talking about is, in addition to Safeway and bagging groceries, a lot of the temp firms these days will take benefits very seriously. So if you are in a transition period where you've left another job behind, you might look at temping to try, first of all, as an exploration, to try lots of different types of employers, lots of different types of perhaps geographic areas, because you often have people who want to move as part of this mm-hmm. activity. And then you'll often get benefits thrown in there if you work a certain minimum number of hours for the temp agency.
Let's get another caller on the line. Now, this is Jim. Jim calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
For 20 years, I've worked for the city of Portland, and during that same time, I've also been a freelance writer for our local Newsweekly here. And then for the last 5 years, I've run a small business on the side, so I've sort of combined a job that pays the mortgage and provides health insurance with the things that I'm more passionate about.
And are you thinking about shifting full time to this passion?
I'm thinking about it, but it really is not really at the point where it's generating enough income to make the shift. You know, the health insurance and the steady income are still pretty important to me and my family. So it's mostly just I'll just take on more hours, not get much free time.
So what you end up doing is working two jobs essentially, Jim.
Yeah, or three really.
Uh-huh. And if you had your druthers, what would you be doing?
I would probably be doing a combination of the writing, which is mostly about food, and my business, which is importing olive oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
But Jim raises a question, Tony Lee. How do you manage to do this shift and maybe not lose your day job?
Well, a lot of people will start it as a hobby, you know, something on the side. And we see that with entrepreneurs as well. The idea of, you know, I want to work in medicine, for example. It's a growing area. Perhaps I'm a welder, and I don't enjoy welding, and I see the future for welders is not great. Medicine seems to be a much stronger area, and I really like working with patients. You know, volunteer at the local hospital to start and get a real good sense of what it's like. Perhaps after emptying bedpans for a week, you realize, gee, medicine's maybe not my thing, you know. You get a good sense. Yep, sure.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that earlier in the show, you opened the segment with a clip from Tom Taylor, mm-hmm. who was a guy who was brew pubs and all sorts of jobs before he decided to become a doctor. And you're quite right. That's exactly what he did. He started to volunteer in the ER in San Francisco Hospital to see whether or not this was just a fantasy, whether or not he really had what he thought he had to give back to the community. And it was that volunteer experience while he was also, you know, tending bar that convinced him to go ahead and go back to med school. So volunteering does seem to be a terrific way to find out if it's really going to work.
Tony,
another thing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, another thing you might want to try that's more, you know, better off for you financially is you have a lot of people who want to get into retailing for whatever reason. You know, they feel like I've got a product or a service I can sell to people and I can make money. And that's a great thing to do part-time. It's something you can start on the weekends. It's something you can offer at night. You can do it in your neighborhood to friends, family. And then, of course, eBay has been a wonderful way for people to try their hands at different marketing services of retail to see how it works and to see if there's really an interest in what it is they're offering.
Now, CareerJournal.com did a report on some of the best and worst jobs in America. And why does it seem like some of those that end up in the worst column are the ones that sound an awful lot of fun? Cowboy, dancer, lumberjack.
Yeah, they're all wonderful jobs when you're 12, I think. sorry, not meaning to offend anyone.
Both Ketchel and I are still 12, but go ahead.
I think we all are, so at some point. Yeah, unfortunately, we use six different criteria to rank these jobs. We do this every couple of years, and they're always fairly controversial. We look at things like income, hiring outlook, you know, what's the likelihood of there being demand for these types of things. What the physical demands of the job are, you know, are you out riding the planes or are you in an air-conditioned office? And what the office environment is like, what the level of stress is like, the work-life balance, you know, how many hours per week are you working, are you traveling, you know, all of those kinds of things. And when we look at that, Cowboy ends up dead last in this latest survey, sadly. As exciting a career as it sounds, Cowboys earn on average about $18,000 a year. They tend to sleep in sleeping bags under tents on the ground, whether it's 10 degrees or 110 degrees. And we interviewed a couple of cowboys on the site, and they tend to get thrown on their head quite a bit. And if they make it through the year without getting bitten by a horse, a cow, a snake, it's a pretty good year. So it's not for everyone.
It sounds like some of the criteria you're using to decide what makes a good job or a bad job, some of the same criteria that career switchers might want to be thinking about.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You know, especially with job security, we have seen some sad stories of people who've said, you know, I'm going to move into a career that unfortunately is you know, disappearing. And so, you know, that's always a fairly questionable idea. But when you look at some of these other jobs that end up in the worst list, some of them are ones that people may think would be pretty interesting. You know, things like, believe it or not, garbage collector. You know, you hear stories of garbage collectors who love their jobs. They're outdoors and they get to meet people and all the rest. Yet the hiring of garbage collectors is really falling dramatically as a lot of the service is getting automated. And, you know, the unions are being convinced to consolidate some of the number of people that needed. So even a job that you think might be kind of interesting and might have a long-term security is actually being affected. So you do need to research careers before you make that switch.
We're talking with Tony Lee of CareerJournal.com and with NPR's Ketzel Levine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Greg. Greg's calling from Tallahassee in Florida.
Neil, I wish I could tell you I was a belly dancer, but I'm not. And it sounds like just from the background of the callers, you'd probably have a real interesting show on why people are getting so burnt out. That's an interesting subject.
Uh-huh.
And I'm somebody in the midst of a change. I just did that 2 months ago, and I did it for my own emotional and mental health. I was on the 300-mile-an-hour treadmill of a large corporate Fortune 500 company, and I had the ability to stop for a while, and I've done that and been able to rest and read and do a little bit of travel. But I have a couple things on the side that are passions that I really love in recent years, acting and writing. But my question is for Ketzel and Tony is what – it's one thing to know what you'd like to do. It's hard to know how to get there in terms of if you've spent if you're midlife and you've spent 20 years – doing something else and you make a profound change, you need the connections and the contacts and all the things that would normally be there if you had been there all that time.
Yeah, a little late to take up an internship, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would argue with that, Neil, because I was just reading some email that has come into me in the last couple of days, and someone told me about someone who had had a career on the police force, I believe it was, or perhaps it was in the military, who decided to do just that and take an internship at a contemporary arts museum to see, I mean, I don't have his story. In fact, I'd really like to find out what his story was. But this was a guy who was in his 40s and was ready to start that. And I would say, you know, people, when you're, I think it's all about laying yourself open, if you will, in a way in which remains comfortable for you. But to make phone calls to people who are doing what you want to do or in the field that you want to go into and say, hey, look, you know, I'm 35, I'm 55. I hope I'm not taking up too much of your time, but I'm really looking to find out more about this. And can you pass me on to someone? My experience with this whole series and with people who are in transition is that we all work very hard at making sense of our time on the planet, and people are enormously helpful in wanting to help you get there. You're not perceived as competition.
Tony,
I think Ketzel, yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. We do a lot of research onto this, and our surveys come back pretty consistently that about 80% of all jobs are found through networking. I mean, that is clearly the most effective way to get a job. And in fact, when you talk to companies, it's about the same percentage, about 80% of all jobs are filled through employee referrals, which is essentially networking. And the idea of telling people that you want to make this change and you're willing to do whatever you can to make this switch, it boils down to determination. You know, if you're really determined to make this change, nothing's going to stop you. I mean, you're going to network with different people to find out about opportunities. You're going to volunteer your services at a company to get some experience, perhaps temp or whatever it is to get into that area. But if you're willing to do whatever it takes and take however long it takes to make the switch, I have yet to meet someone who's done that and not been successful at making the switch.
Hmm.
You know, has it taken them 6 months, a year, 2 years even? Yeah, sometimes it does.
And 10. Even 10
yeah,
years.
Or longer.
Yep.
If you have a spouse, perhaps, who's working, that makes it a lot easier. If you're in a position where you can continue to do the job you have now while you're making this exploration, obviously, that makes it a lot easier. But if you're determined to make the change, it's very hard to stop you from doing it.
Tony Lee, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tony Lee publishes CareerJournal.com, a free career website from the Wall Street Journal, and he comes to us from the Journal studios in Princeton, New Jersey. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be taking more of your calls about midlife career change with NPR's Ketzel Levine. We'll also be talking about the new novel by Saddam Hussein. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, we're talking with NPR senior correspondent Ketzel Levine about her Take Two series, where she profiles people who are going through midlife career changes. Joanna Slabaugh was the first Take Two stories in the series. She left behind her fast-paced life as a Seattle headhunter to work at a flower shop in her small hometown. She's with us now from the Victorian Rose in Pomeroy, Washington. Nice to speak with you.
Hello there.
What prompted you to leave the big city life?
Well, I think I was lacking the sense of community that I had grown up with and just had been seeking around the continent in different large cities, and I wanted to pursue my passion of writing and be closer to my family that lives here where I grew up.
And so was it a, gee, I want to move back to the town where I grew up, or gee, I really want to do something different, or both?
It was kind of all of the above. We have kind of a rare small-town community here where I've known the people since before I was born, basically, and just really was longing for that and was tired of the fast-paced city life and working too much and being unable to sleep at night, and decided to scrap it all and come here and try to pursue the dream of writing, and that's worked out quite well.
I'm sorry, Ketzel, go ahead.
I was just going to say, hi, Joanna. How are things working out?
Hey, Ketzel. Things could not be better, I tell you, because of, I swear I had to move to the backwoods of the world here to have my life just blossom. I even published a book since I got here.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
That is great news.
Yeah.
What I'm curious about is that you suspected that what you were calling the, you know, back to Mayberry
exactly.
was actually starting and was picking up momentum. Have you discovered that other people from your youth have moved back to town?
Well, definitely. There are several people that are here, and some had moved ahead of me, and some are inspired and are trying to move behind me. And I know last time I was interviewed, I got hundreds of emails from people wanting to do the same thing. So I think there's definitely a trend that we're on to here.
Well, I ain't going back to Long Island. You couldn't pay me to go back to Long Island.
Well, I think I'm living proof you can go home again.
Well, Joanna Slabaugh, say hi to Aunt B for us, will you?
Hi, Aunt B.
good luck with your project.
Well, thank you.
Joanna Slabaugh works
Bye,
at Castle. The works at
Bye-bye.
The Victorian Rose Flower and Gift Store in Pomeroy, Washington. Here's another of our emails. As a 35-year-old senior in college, I was plucked out of what had been my short-term career of 13 years as a cook and became director of education for a nationally accredited local history museum in Michigan. One week, I'm sweltering in a 120-degree kitchen, flipping burgers. The next, I was being introduced to the incredible staff I work with now. While I can give some credit to myself for the work and scholarship I did to make me ready for this career, I give the bulk of the credit to my wife, who thought I could do it, and to the museum director, who saw how the skills acquired from working in a restaurant could transfer to working in a museum. I will always be grateful to this person who looked beyond what I was at the moment and instead saw my talent, knowledge, and love of history. So in addition to determination, Ketzel, it looks like if you have somebody who can believe in you, in this case two people who do, that helps too.
Boy, isn't that the truth. And serendipity. Don't forget serendipity.
And serendipity as well.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get one more caller in this program. Kay's calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Gosh, I have changed careers so many times in my life, I'm not sure which aspect I should speak to. I think the thing that one of the problems I've heard, though, that people have talked about consistently is that concept of change and how difficult it can be. And one of the things that it took me a long time to learn through my various career changes was that I actually thrive on change. And it was a major factor, even though I was unaware of it, it was a major factor in why I first changed from having practiced law for 10 years in commercial banking and bankruptcy to an entrepreneurship of trying to design and manufacture tennis wear. That business actually failed. I wasn't successful. But I did find something that I really liked, was really interested in the design world, and pursued networking to end up going back to art school, dropping out of art school to try to get an internship to design for a major greeting card manufacturer here in Kansas City. Ended up being offered a full-time job, worked there for a while, retired, and have ended up now in business with my husband. We've purchased a company, and all of those changes have shown me how much I love change, and also how the weird combination of skills that I have developed through all of those various careers has now ended up serving me so well in what I'm doing presently. So I can recommend change is a very good thing.
Oh, thank you so much, Kay. Ketzel, isn't it interesting how many times you run across people who say, you know, it turns out that I've lived my whole life to get ready for this.
Yeah. Speaking of which, my question to you, Neil, since you're one of those people who have in fact stayed more or less in the same job for a very long time, is if you could be doing anything, what would you do?
I'd be doing play-by-play on a radio on baseball teams. That's what I'd be doing.
Well, we're waiting.
Kay, thank you very much for the call, and continued good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Ketzel Levine, who's your next profile?
I'm looking. I'm actually fishing around. So if you've got a good story to tell and you're in the midst of change, contact us. We'd love to hear about it. In fact, if you'd like to write to TOTN at NPR.org, I'm sure they will forward your story to me.
Unless it's too good and we'll steal it ourselves. Anyway, Ketzel Levine, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Ketzel Levine is senior correspondent for NPR. You can hear her Take 2 series Wednesdays on NPR's Morning Edition. She joined us from her home in Portland, Oregon.